from WXXI News. It's Connections Summer Book Week. I'm Scott Feibusch, in for Evan Dawson all this week. Our connection tonight, this hour, continued to be made through the pages of books all through the pandemic and hopefully beyond into this summer. People who didn't have a lot else to do at least had the opportunity, we hope, to immerse themselves in the pages of a good book. And all this week, we are going to be talking with authors, we are going to be talking with local librarians, and this hour, we are talking with some local publishers and people involved in the book industry in Rochester. In studio this hour, Peter Connors is the publisher and executive director of Boa Editions. Peter, welcome back.
Thank you, Scott.
Chad Post is the publisher for Open Letter Books, based at the University of Rochester. Chad, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So good to have you guys in studio. Have you get a little closer to the microphones there. On the phone with us this hour, Allison Meyer is the Executive Director of Writers and Books. Welcome to Book Week.
Thank you. My name is Myers.
Meyer, I'm so sorry.
Myers with an S.
Myers with an S. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is to join you.
We try to
get these things right, and I apologize. Henry Padron Morales. Did I pronounce that correctly, Henry?
Very good.
Is the co-owner of Ipocampo Children's Books, which is located in the South Wedge. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I want to start with our publishers who are here in studio, and the question I think probably everybody in any kind of business is asking as we get through the pandemic, how did that work out for you?
Well, you know, I can get started. For BOA, we do predominantly poetry. And interestingly enough, poetry a lot of times has its strongest readership during the worst times. So I will say that our sales have actually been up and good. You know, again, it's a strange parallel with difficult times, but I'm really happy that our books have reached readers and connected with them.
Yeah, we actually are up 20% over our best year ever, in part because of some finagling we did, though, where we moved our biggest books from the fall into the spring, knowing that the fall was going to be a time of darkness and despair. So we didn't want to bust out our climate change book on everyone right at the peak of the pandemic. But we did with everything. This spring has been doing absolutely fantastic. I have a question for you, though. Did you get any of the, you didn't get the NEA COVID funding, did you? But did you get the ones from CLMP? Because one of the things that did happen early in the pandemic were different groups that came together to help provide some additional funding for nonprofit publishing, which was incredibly valuable for us.
Yeah, no, we've been fortunate to get that funding too. So we've gotten some good support.
We will dig deeper into that in the course of the hour. We invite you to join us too at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or you can find me on Twitter at Scott Feibusch. And we're happy to hear your questions and to hear what you're up to reading this summer and what you're looking forward to reading. Over the course of the week, too, we're going to be hearing from some prominent Rochesterians about what they are reading this summer. We're going to ask that question later on this hour of our guests, too. Allison Myers, I don't even have to ask whether this has been difficult for an organization that traditionally has people constantly in and out of a very busy building there on University Avenue.
Oh, thanks for asking. Like my colleagues who are in the publishing side of things, literature, I think, has been, relatively speaking to the arts landscape, one of the easier disciplines to deal with because books and workshops are portable. So what happened for us was we migrated much of our reading programs to virtual space, and interestingly, our attendance for that is up about 300% because we've had the opportunity to engage authors from all around the country and readers from all around the country. One of our partners is Boa Editions. We collaboratively air a program called Tuesdays with Boa Editions. And we feature mostly new releases on Boa's list. And Peter conducts conversations with the authors. And that's interesting to people who are writers as well as readers to get kind of a peek behind the creativity curtain. I would say our biggest challenge has been programming for young people. This is not unique to writers and books, but young readers and writers have experienced a lot of Zoom fatigue because school has been delivered that way. So our summer write program, which traditionally enrolls about 600 children, K through 12, declined to about 180 in 2020 because we delivered our program virtually, and we're doing the same with that this summer. But our bookstore, more specific to this conversation, Ampersand Books, which is an indie bookstore, has done quite well as a virtual bookstore.
Is that primarily local? Are you seeing business from outside the area too, as all these geographic barriers have at least broken down?
Yeah, well, it's been an interesting mix. The American Booksellers Association has been an incredible advocate and resource for indies all around the country, and I'm sure Ippo Campo is going to speak to this as well. But yes, we've generated or been grateful for a local, you know, a loyal local following, but we also, through this sort of collaborative online opportunity called Bookshop, where people who are interested in supporting indie bookstores or looking at curated lists can be connected to the bookshop that's closer to them. This is an alternative to spaces like Amazon. So there's been a value shift I've noticed throughout the pandemic, where, as there's been more time, I think, for thoughtfulness and kind of a less of that sort of rigid punching the work clock and people working from home and other people being negatively impacted, obviously, by the pandemic with jobs and resources. It's created, I think, an entire new discourse around what matters.
Allison Myers, thank you. As we pivot to talking about independent bookstores, Henry Padron Morales is the co-owner of Ippo Campo Children's Books. You were kind of just getting started with this new phase in your career after many years in the Rochester City School District, just when all of this hit, right?
Yes, absolutely. And when it came upon us, it was a challenge to stay on top of all the changes. We just celebrated 2-year-old indie bookstore in the South Wedge of Rochester. We had to shift gears. We had to bring the operation literally into our living room, have books delivered, boxes to our home. We had to totally shift at a very young stage in our development. And as has been mentioned, the American Booksellers Association has come through, the Book Industry Charitable Foundation. We're an owner-run business. We did not receive a cent from any of the monies that were being given out to industries with employees. That Industry Charitable Foundation came through for us, and another Monroe County support grant. The Southern Independent Booksellers Alliance is another group that has come through. New Voices, New Rooms is going to provide a July workshop for new book owners, 3 to 5 years. So we have had to become knowledgeable of so many things, and doing it all while we're maintaining our operations as a, once again, recently established indie bookstore in the city of Rochester.
That cannot be easy, and I don't envy you on that. Had you started to build up? Were you at a point at least where you had some community support and people who knew that you were there and were ready to stand by you through this?
That's been our lifeline, actually. Community support has been fantastic. The community pre-COVID were interacting with us in programs and workshops, in classes, as patrons. When this hit us, they were there. They were emailing us. We were going back and forth. We went our online. Our online was nascent at that point. Our online was amazing. What happened with that, and all the all of that, what that implied. So yes, we've had fantastic community support.
And you're going up against, you know, in this case, the biggest company now that is out there. And same thing, you know, from the Writers and Books end, obviously, with Ampersand, and to the extent that that you're selling directly from BOA and from Open Letter. It's the elephant in the room, obviously. Allison, I'll start with you. What is the argument? How do you get people to continue to go local and to go small? Mm-hmm. You had mentioned that value proposition. How do you sell mm-hmm. people on that when, you know, Amazon is as close as their smart speaker or their phone and is constantly in on everything that people are searching for these days?
Well, I really think that conversation is in the national air. There is a great deal, in fact, books being published now. There's a great deal being published on self-care. Clearly, there have been political movements going on that are critical, you know, have moved critical issues in our national discourse to front of mind, such as Black Lives Matter. And indie bookstores and indie publishers, the small presses, like BOA and Open Letter and the university presses, are much better positioned to pivot to engaging with important issues because they've always been mission-driven. They've always focused on the curated book experience. For example, with our online business, we found during the initial months of the pandemic, people were actually buying many more of publishers' backlist titles as opposed to what's on Oprah's Choice or, you know, what is on the New York Times bestseller list, as though they were, you know, kind of doing a retrospective of their reading lives and saying, what are some of the classics that I missed and that might enrich my knowledge, my critical thinking, my empathy. And then we had an opportunity to be thoughtful in curating lists such as a Black Lives Matter list. We have asked one of our community partners, 540 West Main, which is a wonderful organization that does trainings in diversity, inclusion, and equity, to curate a list for us as well. There has been so much discussion, not only in the publishing world and the reading world, but in the culture in general. For instance, when there were hate crimes against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders that was in the news, this was an opportunity for organizations, nonprofits, and publishers who have always been bringing marginalized voices into the center of awareness to actually have some attention focused on the important work that's been going on for a long time. So I think it's more about sort of what's getting privileged in awareness. There is more, I think, in general, attention to what is the importance of the books that we're talking about, what are the conversations we're having versus where can I get my book the fastest or with the biggest discount. Obviously, people's pocketbooks matter, and I know indies, including Ampersand, strive to attend to pocketbooks, but I think the value that is really emerging is one of a personal relationship, an opportunity to engage with your bookseller in a conversation, engage with your publisher in a conversation, engage with authors in conversation, as opposed to a more transactional model and anonymity. I think there's been a great thirst for personal connectedness, and independent publishers and independent bookstores like Ecofalfo and Ampersand and so many others tend to fill that space.
Allison Myers, the Executive Director of Writers and Books, with us on Summer Book Week on Connections, along with Henry Padron Morales from Ipocampo Children's Books, and two of our local publishers, Peter Connors from BOA Editions and Chad Post from Open Letter Books. I want to turn back to Peter and to Chad here. From the publishing end of this, you know, obviously the books that you're publishing are not mass market titles. You're not going up against the sort of things that would be in the front of the house when you walk into a Barnes & Noble, or that would be on the front of an Amazon homepage. And honestly, you know, Amazon almost looks like they've turned away in some ways from any kind of focus on books. And perhaps that works out well for everybody. But let's talk a little bit about the role that you play, about some of what's out new from both your presses. And we want to bring you in on the phone, too, at 844-295-TALK. And we've got a couple of calls that we'll get to already from people with their own summer reading suggestions, and we'll get to those in a moment. But I want to give both of you a chance to talk a little bit about what you are up to, especially as we take this pivot now past the pandemic and what's coming next. And Chad, why don't you?
It's interesting. Yeah, one thing I wanted to comment on is what Allison said about the beginning of the pandemic in particular. Our backlist started selling much better than the new books. It was so much harder to launch a new book. We had like a really big book scheduled for May 5th of last year that did well and got like good critical attention. But all the events that were scheduled, the tours, the hype, the buzz was just gone. And people did seem to be gravitating towards older books that seemed more comfortable and from a time prior to what we're dealing with. I remember editing a sample that's in the Spanish sample from this guy whose story is set in 2016. And the character's like, this is the worst year ever. It'll never get worse than this. And I'm like, ha ha ha. Yeah. Well, but we also had been planning for a long time to transition to incorporating more nonfiction and translation into our list, specifically with Polish reportage. We have a book on called Gambare that's coming out in October, November, that is about the tsunami and the Fukushima incident in Japan. And it tells like all these stories of all these people who lived through, what happened to them. People are seeing like their relatives as ghosts. And all of those books, we have another one, Foucault in Warsaw, that comes out next week. That's about Foucault being put up into like a honey trap to get him out of Poland when homosexuality was banned when he was there in the 50s. And those books have been really resonating. On Time and Water by Andrzej Snar Magnusson, we sold out of the first print run immediately. It's the first hardcover that we've ever done. So there is something to be said, like to echo what you said, Allison, about the kind of the personal connection and the nonfiction side of things as well. And it's been really good for us as a position for the press.
Peter?
Yeah, I will say two words for Boa, and that's Lucille Clifton. She is somebody who has perennially been a go-to author for Boa and for people interested in poetry, and you know, also a backlist author for Boa. Right before the pandemic hit, we released a selected poems of hers called How to Carry Water that was edited by a woman named Aracelis Girmay, who's also a Boa poet. And so the timing of that was extremely interesting. We also have a collected poems of Lucille Clifton that's an 800-page book. So while the pandemic was hitting, and particularly when Black Lives Matter was really exploding onto consciousness, Lucille Clifton's books started to sell like crazy. And so we have had to reprint this 800-page hardcover book, which is now about 10 years old. We hadn't had to reprint it once. We've reprinted it twice. And How to Carry Water is selling like crazy, too. We also started a series called Blessing the Boats Selections in honor of Lucille Clifton that are books, poetry collections by women of color, edited and curated by a woman of color who that job will rotate. It's an editor-in-large position, and that's new within the past couple years, too. So all of these things have really been a focus for Boa and have, you know, with the times, too, have really drawn a lot of readers to what we're doing.
Which unintentionally sets us up perfectly here to go to the phones. Catherine from Fairport, what have you been reading from Boa recently?
Well, what a coincidence. I wanted to talk about the book that Boa published of the poetry of Lucille Clifton. It is an absolutely beautiful book, hardcover, good quality paper, something to treasure, and it has a total of 769 of her poems, which is quite an output. this includes 11 books that were published of hers, and then also 50 poems that were never published, so they're new. And I think Lucille Clifton, from my point of view, a little bit at a time, because she is so powerful in her writing, and you really have to divine exactly what is she trying to tell me in her own words. And so I try not to read too many at a time and just digest them. So my congratulations to Boa for a wonderful, wonderful collection of poems from a great poet. So I hope other people will at least borrow it from our public library. There's 4 copies that you can borrow.
Thank you so much. And we should also note, too, that Lucille Clifton was born and raised in Buffalo, which is a really neat thing for us. And just so you know, we are releasing How to Carry Water, the new selected, in paperback this fall as well. So please check that out, too.
Very good. Thank you. She's one of my very favorites, and I hope other people discover her, too. Thank you. Bye.
Catherine, thank you so much for calling in, and we welcome your calls, too, at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. We will continue our conversation as we begin Summer Book Week with Peter Connors from Boa Editions, Chad Post from Open Letter Books, Allison Myers from Writers and Books and Ampersand Books, and we will hear more from Henry Padron Morales of Ipocampo Children's Books. But one of the things we've been doing to get ready for Summer Book Week, I have been going out and about and asking some prominent Rochesterians what they have been reading and what they can recommend this summer. And I just happened, as I was walking around trying to find a fifth person to talk to for the series, I was walking by the Brighton Public Library just last week and ran into the Democrat and Chronicle's Gary Craig and had the chance to talk to him about what he has been reading this summer.
Actually, I'm about to pick up from the library the very first in the Sarah Paretsky V.I. Warshawski series, which I've never read and I've always heard about. I read the most recent one lately, and I said, I'll just go back and start from the beginning. I've been on a weird binge pandemic with starting sort of a mystery series at the start and plugging through them all.
So you're one of those people who could sit down during the pandemic and focus on reading.
Yeah, I actually read a lot during the pandemic. And the other thing I've got going, I typically have a nonfiction and a fiction going at once. I'm also reading The Sixth Extinction by Elizabeth Colbert, which I've had probably for 2 years now, meaning to get to. So I'm sort of be bouncing back and forth between those two books.
What's that one about?
It's about, you know, sort of the extinctions throughout our history and sort of what caused them. And it's kind of, I'm not there yet. I assume it's going to be a look forward and present at sort of where we are with climate change, et cetera. But it's just, Elizabeth Colbert, you know, who writes for The New Yorker, is able to take very arcane scientific materials and whip them into shape for, you know, somebody like me to actually grasp.
Oh, her stuff is great. Where do you read?
All over. I read at home. I do a lot of my reading before going to bed at night. But yeah, just at home. And sometimes I work at Starbucks a lot. I'll take a book, but more often than not, I'm working there, reading a newspaper there.
I'm catching you in front of one of our favorite places, the Brighton Library. How much do you depend on libraries for your reading versus buying stuff?
Oh, I love libraries. I'm truly in this Brighton library probably 4 times a week, and that's actually where I'm coming to pick up the Paretsky book. I still buy books. I like to buy nonfiction because I usually don't read them quick enough to get them returned to the library, but most of my fiction I get at the library.
Speaking of nonfiction.
Thank you. I'm working, it's actually off to the publisher heads off to the printers now. It's going to be a book coming around the anniversary of Attica, the 50th anniversary this year in September, called The Prison Guard's Daughter, My Journey Through the Ashes of Attica. Obviously, I'm not a prison guard's daughter, but it's a memoir of D. Quinn Miller, whose father, Billy Quinn, William Quinn, was the first casualty at Attica. And D has had a tremendous, phenomenal life, sort of learning of her dad and learning of the uprising. And I've known her for 20 years, and I've always found her story so inspiring. So I basically, it's her story. I just co-wrote the memoir with her, and it should be out in September.
This is a story, obviously, that you have been engaged in for a very long time.
Yes, I've been writing about Attica since 2000 when the inmate settlement happened here in Rochester, and I covered all of that, and I was actually just plunging through the 3,000 pages of transcripts yesterday. And then Forgotten Victims of Attica emerged, which is a group of the families of, you know, corrections officers and other prison employees who either died at Attica or survived with their own trauma. And Dee was one of the leaders of that. And so I've known folks on the inmate side, the prison employee side, for the last 20 plus years.
Well, how long have you been spending working on this? How long was the process with her?
It was quicker than I'd prefer for a book, but yeah, the publisher really wanted it for the 50th anniversary, so I took 6 weeks sort of off from work. You know, the part of it will show up in the newspaper, so it was partly working, and I knew her story so well that it helped. We would interview for hours upon hours by phone each day, and then I would sit down and write the story, and then we'd bounce it back and forth and edit it. So it was a pretty constant for about 6 weeks earlier or late last year.
I'll tell you, one of the things on my summer reading list is 7 Million.
Oh, thank you. Yes. That's a book that I wrote a few years back about the Brinks robbery and here in Rochester, which had possibly IRA connections and an incredible cast of characters, a priest, an IRA guerrilla, a retired cop. And actually it's been sort of nice this week. A few people sort of tweeted about it, and I just looked at you go online, you can't help but look at these rankings on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. It actually sold some copies this week, where I thought by now it'd just sort of be sitting idle, but it was nice to see.
It is. Gary Craig, thanks so much.
That was Gary Craig from the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, one of the voices you will hear during Summer Book Week. Our Summer Book Week conversation with local publishers and booksellers continues right after this break. On the next Connections, can the conspiracy theory cycle be broken? Could a saner style of politics become the norm again? We'll talk with U of R professor Scott Tyson. And Summer Book Week continues. We'll talk to author Lisa Napoli about her new book on the founding mothers of NPR and the network's fight for survival in its early years. I'm Scott Feibusch in for Evan Dawson. Talk to you Tuesday on the next Connections. It's Connections Summer Book Week from WXXI News. I'm Scott Feibusch in all week for Evan Dawson. And this hour on Connections, we are talking with people who connect you with books, whether they are publishers, literary organizations, or bookstores. Our guests in studio are Peter Connors, the publisher and executive director of BOA Editions, Chad Post, the publisher of Open Letter Books. On the phone with us, Allison Myers, the executive director of Writers and Books, and Henry Padron Morales is the co-owner of Ipocampo Children's Books. Henry, I want to come back to you as we move into the second phase of our discussion here. Moving out of the pandemic and going forward, how are you seeing things shaping up in terms of getting back into having people in a physical bookstore, in terms of reconnecting people with books? And especially, we'll be talking about this some more on Friday when we delve into YA literature, but keeping children connected to reading as we head into the summer months.
We've seen a increase now that folk are coming in and out of the store of a range of family members. We've had grandparents interested in books for their grandchildren, great-grandchildren. We have moms and dads interested in books for their nephews and nieces. We've had the children themselves. We have a group of young people who are our ambassadors, and they come in and give us suggestions about what is it that they're interested in. We've seen that whole mix play in. On the big box question from before,
yeah, please do.
Our patrons come in and they literally tell us that they are mindfully supporting us instead of these big boxes, that they value what we're doing. They value our curated collection. We've also seen, as far as the books that are moving, that there's a range of incredible board books for even the littlest ones. They start from these indestructibles. These are books that are made that a child cannot rip the pages. If they drool on them, it will not disintegrate the pages. You can literally wash them. We have a collection of those in English and in Spanish. Lots of interest in those. The board books, there's one anti-racist baby, One Love, a song by Bob Marley. There's Hair Love. Whose toes are these? The characters in these books are showing the colors of our people. They're in the languages of our people. It's a very interesting phenomena to see. And then you jump the other end of what's really, really attracting is our cookbooks. There's been a run on The Black Farmer, for example. There's a cookbook about black farming and all that this person tells about the history of black farming. Jubilee is a collection of recipes from over 100 years that are put into this volume of all these different dishes that can be prepared. Dumpling is one about the dumplings. Figs is one about Mediterranean. We're seeing a tremendous amount of interest in families using these as a family uniting moment in their homes. Children's cookbooks, children's baking, children's cookies, children's culinary arts are really also really exciting to see. And then in early and middle readers, we have graphic novels are really taking off for early readers. The New Kid, Roald Dahl, Kylo, Sadiq and Yasmin. All of these are sort of giving us our energy for moving in multiple directions. I moderated a book group, Yukayeke Book Group. It's a collaboration between Hipocampo and the Ibero-American Action League. And we read Clap by Elizabeth Acevedo. It's a YA title, which you said you're going to talk about later. We read Three Mothers, the book about the moms of Baldwin, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King. Their story, these great men came from great women and what they accomplished in life. One of our most exciting reads was on the Young Lords Party. The Young Lords Party was in the late 60s, a political organization that started actually in Chicago, came to New York, and were involved in Harlem in multiple activities and political statements. And these all of these put together have become the dynamic, the phenomena that we have lived through during the last year. And I can continue rattling off titles and what have you, but suffice it to say that we our goal is to represent the languages and cultures that make up Rochester. We've had more and more expectation to provide books in Portuguese, in Swahili, in Urdu, in Spanish, of course, in Greek, in Italian, in French, in Creole Patois. It's amazing to see how the community is coming, wanting these books in their native languages, in Arabic, et cetera, et cetera.
And if you ever doubted the value of having an engaged local bookseller, connecting with readers and full of recommendations, and I hope our producer, Emma Ray, was getting all of those to put those up on the Book Week website as soon as we're done here. But Henry, thank you. We will come back to you before the end of the show, too, to find out what you are reading before the summer is over. You mentioned in particular this idea of reaching people in the languages that they speak. And I want to turn from there kind of over to Chad Post and Open Letter Books, because, of course, your mission is to connect people to books that were written in languages that they don't necessarily speak. Mm-hmm. What's that process like now? How do you open people's minds up if they're focused on the bestsellers? How do you sell them on the idea that, you know what, you might want to pick up this book that was written in Norwegian or this book that was written in Japanese, yeah. And it's not going to scare you. It doesn't bite.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a challenge, but in a lot of ways, the books sort of speak for themselves, and the quality of the books are what's going to drive a lot of readers to them or attract a lot of readers to picking things up. And we've had a lot of success this year with just not overplaying that it's a translation, just being like, this is a really good Korean book written by a French woman who lives in Switzerland and is like a beautifully sparse book, which just takes off, which is an actual book called Winter in Sokcho, which we came out with a month or two ago and has been doing really well for us. But we found like during the pandemic times, like there is, as everyone keeps mentioning, with everything being online, the geography is gone. So the geography of like how we had to do things in the past, of how we promoted things, or had that physical space, that physical event, that's transitioned away from there. So it's in some sense feels a little bit easier to connect people with these international writers because we have so many more international writers who are willing to like do Zoom readings or record them in advance and have them played at different points in time. And that wasn't really available before. So we've had a good luck with that.
You have time zone issues, I'm sure, to deal with.
Oh, good God. Yeah, I have time zone issues like constantly. But yeah, there's that's always been a problem. It's always been a tricky thing to get people over. And now that we have this material, it also can live online for a lot longer. And one thing that's been interesting that Allison alluded to, and I can bring this up in relation to another store in town as well named Akimbo Books, is that during the pandemic, like you mentioned, Bookshop launched in February of last year as a way of like giving independent bookstores an online space where they could sell books that they didn't have to have an inventory. They're fulfilled through Ingram. They don't have to like stack all those books, but they're able to connect with their readership and with their readers and develop something. So all of a sudden you have like all these booksellers who, instead of being tied to like a physical location where you have to walk in and see their staff picks, are able to promote things in a much broader way than they had before. And there's one person here in town named Rachel Crawford who is running one called Akimbo Books that is going to have a pop-up at John's Tex-Mex on June 26th from 11 till 2. And this is like a new business model that the bookstore can be her curating these lists, getting a certain amount of inventory, bringing it to a space, and not being tied to that and trying to find new ways of connecting readers to books. And we've found that we've benefited a lot from those kind of movements over the past year.
That's fascinating. I want to check that out. We are talking summer books on Summer Book Week on Connections. I'm Scott Feibusch, in for Evan Dawson. Peter Connors and Chad Post are publishers here in the studio with us. Henry Padron Morales of Hipocampo Children's Books. And I want to come back around to Allison Myers at Writers and Books because we've had this idea of physical space pop up a couple of times in our last hour today. In our noon hour, we were talking about comedy, and I brought up the Writers and Books open mic. The almost last Friday's open mic that has gone virtual for the duration. I know one of the big questions that keeps coming up there, even as they've brought in comics now far away from Rochester who are participating in this, is still, hey, when can we all get back in physically and be together? How is that looking now from your point of view?
Thanks for asking that question. I just wanted to tag team on what Chad said and mention another very... Oh, were you talking to me?
Yes. Yeah, please go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Another indie bookstore in Rochester to bring your listeners' attention to, which is Cerebral Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And the focus there is on Black and African-American. It centers Black and African-American experiences, literatures, and culture. So and they're operating in physical space. So I think your listeners would be very interested to check that out.
They are just up State Street from us, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, great. So we do not have a comedy open mic, but we have had an open mic for readings. So basically people who are from the community who want to share a poem or a piece of prose or, you know, flash fiction or a bit of an essay, we welcome them to come and do that once a month. We're not certain about when we're opening our facility, full bore, but we're aiming to be open in October, at least the first floor. October is the month when we're launching Rochester Reads, one of our big community read initiatives that we skipped a year on. We did not deliver this in 2020, and we're looking forward to doing that in 2021. We're also hosting a literary conference that will be virtual, but we'll have a kickoff gathering on site in Ampersand Books at 740 University Avenue. We're at this point very committed to continuing and sustaining our online reading series, both Tuesdays with BOA editions and our visiting authors. And then the goal is for our local and regional authors who have new books out, we'd love to partner and do book launches in real space. That's something that I think could be really, people really enjoy that opportunity to get up close and personal, of course, with all the precautions in place around vaccination and masking where appropriate. So we're a small organization. We don't have a massive staff. And so everything that goes into ensuring the absolute standards of operating the space is going to take a little bit of thought. But we're looking forward to at least a hybrid situation with programming in the fall.
Excellent. Playing it cautiously. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, and being safe, and that obviously is a priority. And I imagine, too, that there are, you know, there's certainly not just people out of the region, but I've heard from people in a lot of online contexts who say, hey, having this available online has helped me be involved when perhaps I'm physically unable to get out or don't have transportation to an event. So there's certainly, I can see where there's a value to continuing that. So I'm glad that's going to continue.
And we're also partnering with many community organizations and sites. We talked to some of our senior centers. We're now working with local librarians to see in what ways we can help support their programming in their spaces, either hybrid or in person, and therefore have more of a create more accessibility for the community at large, and so that transportation is less of an issue, and really kind of creating a physical space that becomes an expanded idea. So partnerships to us are really important and also give us an opportunity to learn more about community needs and to be responsive to those, to actually co-curate our programming with our community partners.
Exciting. Peter Connors, I want to come back to you in studio with us, too, and kind of pose the same question to you that I posed to Chad, which is, how do you get people, and I'm looking right at myself here, who may not necessarily understand a lot about poetry or feel like they understand a lot about poetry, how do you get people to try it?
You know, as has been discussed here a bunch of times, I mean, a lot of what we're talking about is people connecting with other people, and how does that happen, and where does that happen? And with poetry in particular, it's always been something that people who don't understand poetry, maybe, you know, don't even like it for some reason. A lot of times, if they actually get to a poetry reading, they come away with a deeper understanding of, you know, what poetry means, and certainly about that poet in particular. And I've seen it many times to be a transformative experience for people who just don't connect with poetry. So that's obviously been a challenge this year during COVID, of not having in-person poetry readings. Certainly online, Zoom things, Tuesdays with Boa has been wonderful. The other thing we did as a result of that, and thinking more about that, is to start an audiobook line. And the thinking behind that was, people go to readings, they hear it in the poet's voice, then they connect with the material. So we've actually launched our first poetry audiobook read by the poet. It's called I Am Not Trying to Hide My Hungers from the World. The poet's name is Kendra DiColo. It's a fantastic book, really fun, funny, interesting, a little edgy. And this is something that we're now going into our backlist titles. And so my next project, our next project with audiobooks, is to take all the poetry collections by a poet named Naomi Shihab Nye, who's actually been on the show before, a very well-known, you know, internationally known poet, and put all her backlist titles from BOA, release them all as audiobooks. And the next step after that would be a poet named Lee Young Lee. So, and then my hope is to eventually be able to do simultaneous releases of all our books as, you know, paperback, audiobook, and ebooks.
It'll be interesting to see as people begin traveling again, which, you know, traditionally is a vector for consumption of audiobooks as you're on the road, to see how much more of that picks up. You've gotten a good reaction so far, though, to your inaugural venture there?
Definitely. You know, it's strange because in so much of the literary, the publishing world, audiobooks are just standard now. You know, with the larger publishing houses, it's not that big of a deal. But for smaller independents, it's a very big deal. And part of the reason we hadn't gotten into it was just the logistics of how do we get, you know, the poet on recorded at a high quality level. And I didn't want to do it unless it sounded absolutely professional, and these do. We connected with a producer out in Nashville who is now recording all our audiobooks. So it's been really exciting, and the quality is great. The feedback's been wonderful.
The technology certainly has gotten cheaper and easier and faster to do when you're not, I assume, offering these as physical CDs or anything. This is just a an MP3 file that you download, right?
Yeah, that's right. And they're available wherever audiobooks are sold, too. I guess another part of this is that our distributor consortium opened up outlets for audiobooks to be distributed, wherever anybody would buy an audiobook. So now, literally, not only could we record this at a price that we, could afford to do and release it, but it's distributed internationally, too.
Exciting. We're down to our final minutes. Henry Padron Morales from Hipocampo Children's Books, I want to come back to you, and I know you could probably do half an hour on this. I want to ask you to just keep it to one or two. What are you reading or looking forward to reading this summer?
I'm reading a pre-release, The Inheritance of Orquídea Divina by Zoraida Córdoba. It's a story of change and family magic, the story of a woman and how she survives throughout continents and decades. It's magical realism. It's fascinating. It's a YA title. And then there's nonfiction. I'm reading Caribbean Islands Movements, Culebras, Trans Insularities by Carlo A. Cubero. Interestingly enough, Culebra is the island of my paternal side of the family, and his work is a study of how the island has maintained its identity as a island municipality of Puerto Rico, 3,000 people, 12 nautical miles away from the big island of Puerto Rico. Two very different but interesting reads that I'm currently engaged with.
Exciting. Allison Myers of Writers and Books, do you get the chance to read for pleasure too?
I do. My summer reading so far will be Ross Gay's collection, Beholding, a collection by Reginald Dwayne Betts Fellin, and essays by Hanif Abdurraqib, A Little Devil in America. That's what's on my nightstand right now.
Excellent. Chad Post of Open Letter Books.
Yeah, when I'm not editing seven books at once, been reading, I've found through audiobook of Summer Water, Sarah Moss's work, who's a Scottish writer, and I absolutely fell in love with it, and I've been reading everything of hers so far this summer. I'm going to stick with that amid all of the editing.
Amidst. Peter Connors.
Right now I'm reading a book about the making of the album Kind of Blue by Miles Davis, which is my all-time desert island album. I was telling a friend that, and he said, have you read this book about the making of the album, and proceeded to give it to me. So I'm really enjoying that.
I know music books are kind of your specialty. I still need to read your Cornell 77 book. I haven't gotten, maybe that'll be part of my summer reading file. I don't know. Okay. I want to ask you all as we get towards the final minutes of the show, I know, for me at least, one thing that happened as we were in the midst of the pandemic was that I couldn't get myself engaged necessarily to dig into a book and to spend time and get focused enough. I'd sit there just aimlessly scrolling on my phone, and I suspect a lot of us did. Am I unique in that? Should I feel like I just couldn't quite get myself motivated, or are you hearing from other people who had that?
At the beginning, like back in March of 2020 and in April, I had so many discussions with booksellers and friends and people, and everyone was having trouble. And I also teach at the University of Rochester. My students were like, ugh, I don't want to read anything. But then slowly things did start to change. I think there was like moments during the summer where it felt less like precarious and people started to have a little bit more ability to focus. And by the time I taught my spring class, the students I had were like locked in to every book that we read and were like all very, very, very aware. So I think it shifted, but I was definitely in that camp. I couldn't read anything for weeks. I'd read like 15 pages and forget everything.
This was a virtual. Yeah, I knew I was slipping when my pile of New Yorkers started going from one or two to 20 to 30, and I still have most of last year sitting there, and it's going to end up in recycling eventually, but I'm going to at least get through the cartoons before it goes. Peter Connors.
Yeah, I will say, like Chad said, especially early on, I would find myself, particularly after work, just sort of staring into the middle distance, But I will tell you, a happy ending to that story is I decided I needed to engage my brain, and I actually went back to a novel that I had started 20 years ago that I had started writing, and dug back into it and started doing rewrites and got my brain engaged. And I'm happy to say it will be published next June by a great independent press called Manic D Books out of San Francisco. So there's a happy ending to the story, but I had to really kick my brain out of the doldrums to get there.
I'm marking you down right now for Summer Book Week 2022. We will get you back for an author interview for that. Allison Myers, is that a common thing, or are we alone here? Or?
Yeah, I'm going to just concur with what's already been said. I think everything in the beginning of the pandemic was so novel and disconcerting and impacting many people in many different ways, so it's hard to generalize. But I did hear from colleagues and peers and that there was this period of kind of trying to reorganize your priorities, both for your personal life, perhaps your work life, certainly your domestic family life, especially families with children at home. So I think settling into a book actually requires a certain amount of psychic space. And if your brain is coping with lots of other kinds of messages, I think it's hard to create that space. And then once people established or found their own rhythms and also new ways to connect with other people virtually, some of that really started to settle out. And I believe that the pleasure people were taking in reading for pleasure and for knowledge, actually rose.
You know, the good news is that the books are there waiting for us whenever each of us is ready to get back to them. I know sitting down and getting back into doing some reading for this week on Summer Book Week has certainly, it felt good. I forgot what I was missing. It was nice to get back, and I'm looking forward to reading some of your titles. Peter Connors is the publisher and executive director of BOA Editions. Chad Post is the publisher of Open Letter Books. Allison Myers is the executive director of Writers and Books, and they also run Ampersand Books. And Henry Padron Morales joined us from Ipocampo Children's Books. They are located on South Avenue in the South Wedge. Thank you all so much for being with us here on Summer Book Week on Connections from WXXI. I am Scott Feibusch in for Evan Dawson. Megan Mack is our executive producer. Emma Ray Stein is our producer today. Rob Braden is behind the boards. We have so much more Summer Book Week coming this week. You can find all the details of the authors we're interviewing and more conversations at WXXINews.org. We'll see you all through the week. Thanks for being with us.